This Sunday. Sunday. Side by side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino calls them as they sees them, and you better believe them. Here! Relevant news, biased opinions, and outright bullshit regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gas, but mechanical trickery never before revealed over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Chris and Ray cuss each other down the track and barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil! All that and much more this Sunday at high noon on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and Live Feed, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free. Every Sunday at noon on WHPC. Take the Long Island Expressway to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the sign saying no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Sunday!
All right, and we are live, Motormouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive talk show, here from the bunkers and the depths of our own dachas, because things are a little different this week. But you do have your host, Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer. Chris, how you doing today?
I don't know. I'm just warming up my dachas right now.
Yeah, nice and toasty.
Yes, I like it here. And we're in the basement of Motormouth Radio Productions. It's very cool.
Yeah,
this is nice. Very covert. I know we're doing this for testing purposes only.
Just to prove we can do a radio show from anywhere.
Right. Because if you hear this show, something has gone wrong.
Right. Well, if you don't hear it, something's gone wrong. So, well, let me ask you a question. You know, speaking about going wrong and keeping in the vein of what we usually do. Did you have a chance to do any automotive work this week?
Other than shoveling the snow off the car, I unfortunately have to say no. I have not done any automotive work this week whatsoever. This was the week from winter's hell, as far as I was concerned. But what about you?
Wow. Yeah.
Don't tell me you were under a vehicle.
I did.
You were a better man than me, Gunga Din.
You know, earlier in the week, we had one of those days that was like 68 degrees, a couple of spots around Long Island. And I had to take a half a day off because I had a meeting with a financial planner. Mm. So I had to be available for that. So I had some time before that, and I used it to do an oil change on the problem child car. The one that I was having trouble getting an inspection for because of a check engine light and service issues. And I said, well, what happened was, just to back up, I was having trouble with that inspection. We spoke about this last week, and I did use a little device called an extender.
I know. And it makes you smile every time you say that.
Yeah, I borrowed yours, and it does work. It works great. So, you know, I'm not giving it back, though, because I need it. You have to get another one. I'll get you another one. I'll get you a bigger
Please give me another. Can you give me one that can extend further?
Yes. Yeah, we'll do that. They have one now, like that now. And what it does is it I don't know if we should be talking about this on an automotive show, but it kind of cheats the system where it
I was going to say, you could talk about your personal problems on this show. That's fine. Yeah, no one's listening.
It moves especially the probe.
Ooh.
Moves the probe further out of the airflow.
Nice.
And lets the sensor not see the full stream, if you will.
Right. And
in doing so, you know, the car, the computer thing said everything is okay and you're right.
You don't want it to see the full stream of your probe. I get it.
Yeah. So it worked. And right. I was driving the car around earlier in the week. Was it Tuesday? I don't know. We were no check engine light and my data was okay. I had readiness monitors set. And my wife wanted to go to a store. And I said, you know what? I'll go with you. I said, but when we're done, you have to come with me and we have to go to the inspection place. One of the guys that we know from this show, because the store is in close proximity. I said, this way, you know, we'll save on the trip. And right. She's, oh, okay. And we did. And we sat, you know,
wait, what'd she say again?
Oh, okay. And you know, rightfully so. We did sit there for a while. You have to wait your turn. You know, when sure. it's almost, we've talked about this on the show a lot. It's almost, sometimes not worth it when you deal with people who you know, you kind of take the back seat you're not on the fast track because the customers, the paying customers, the guys that are dropping tens and thousands of dollars, they kind of get the first class seat, and you have to wait.
Yes. You know, it's funny. You're dipping into a territory that I totally agree with you on. Sometimes having that friend type of business arrangement can be a detriment, but go right ahead. Yeah.
Right. So that's what we did. We had to sit and wait, spend some time. And then he brought the car in. Now I brought the car there and didn't shut it off. I left it running because, right. You know, everybody has said this. I never had experienced it, but they said, look, if it's running and the check engine light isn't on, leave it running. Don't shut it off. So okay. It ran for almost an hour, you know, nice. Out there, fan coming on, fan going off, fan coming on, fan going off. They brought it in and then pulled it outside, and the mechanic who worked on it did shut it off and said, okay, yeah, it passed. I'm like, nice, beautiful.
Nice.
Okay. Yep. Pay him the money, give him a tip, talk a little more, and said, okay, we got to go. So then the funniest thing, it was the payoff moment at that point.
The check engine light went on.
Well, we get in the car, we belt up, I start the car, and bing, check engine light is on. And
no, you're kidding me.
Yes, yes. It's exactly what you want to see. That's what you want to see.
It was a failure, but it was a perfectly timed failure.
So
I love it.
I had to impress upon my wife several times the importance of the timing of that incident. I said, this is why you don't shut it off. You know?
Yes.
And now on the backside of that, driving around a little while longer, like the next day, I realized, like, you know, the light went out again. Now the light has been out. So it's kind of relearning itself. But because of that, I said, I'm going to treat this car to an oil filter, you know, change, because I hadn't done it in a while. And even the buddy who inspected the car, he came out, you know, with the thing. He says, wow, this car's got 1,000 miles on it since last year. I'm like, yeah, it's the beater. It's the one nobody wants to drive. I take it to work once, you know, every now and again. And, you know, it doesn't get a lot of use. So, cheater in place, sticker on window, good for another year, and everything is fine. So
about that car, I have to officially say here on the test show, on the Motor Mouth Radio test show, I have to officially say that I have to eat my words.
What was it that you're eating? What did you say?
Because I had said to you for the longest time, sell that car.
Oh, yeah.
Get rid of it. Sell the car. And you refrained as usual. You did not listen to what I said, and this time it worked out for the better, because now gasoline is going up and is going up even higher. We're going to see over $4 a gallon in the next couple of weeks, and what's the best car in your stable to handle this crisis?
Yeah, that is a good one. You're right.
That little car. And this is the funny thing, and I'm sure your ears were ringing this week, because instead of working on a vehicle this week, I was on Facebook Marketplace looking for a little car like that.
Oh, want to buy one? I got one for sale.
If you can keep that check engine light off,
I'm inspection. It is off. Yeah. Yeah. Fresh oil, two new tires. It's in good shape otherwise. AC works. Not that you care.
Ooh, that's, yeah, I wouldn't care. My wife would. But right. No, I'm thinking that is, to me, the greatest car. And I've always said this. I've always said that there should be in every stable, if anybody can possibly do it, if they could squeak it out, get a small little Toyota Corolla or a Honda Civic or anything like that, and just keep it on the side, because you never know when you're going to need it. You never know when you're going to need a little tiny car that can just scoot around in. I mean, it's a luxury. To you, it's a luxury, but it's almost getting to the point now, it's almost like a necessity. I have two Mama Luke vehicles that we use back and forth that get like an average of 17, 18 miles to a gallon. I'm thinking this right about now is not really those aren't really the greatest vehicles in the world to have, because if my wife is just ferrying to the store, or if I'm going to Home Depot, we're taking those cars. I'm not going to take the Chrysler.
Right.
I mean, that thing, just starting that up will use six gallons of gas. So that's why I'm like, I better get on the stick here and find nothing expensive, just something to kick around in. And that's, that's really been the goal. So yeah, that's where I've been automotively this last week.
The only problem with that theory of letting a car sit is that you're letting it sit.
Well,
and
yeah,
not always the same when you reactivate them, you know.
That is true. That is true. No, and like you say, you have to delegate when to use the vehicle. Like, I mean, I just sold the LeBaron, which was the most fuel efficient vehicle I had in the stable. And of course, right. I sold it like a month ago. But yeah, there were times where that car sat for 6 weeks at a time. Sure. And you get in and hit the key and all of a sudden, you know, freaky stuff would happen. It's like, what is going on here? I had a laugh. There was one particular instance. I hit the button, the passenger button, on the window, the passenger seat button. I hit the passenger door. I hit the button. It wasn't going down. I'm like, this thing worked just fine. There you go. What is going on? I'm rocking the button, shaking the window. And finally, all of a sudden, it started working again. I'm like, okay, that was a little weird.
Yeah.
But it's when a car sits, freaky stuff happens, which is the case. So, yeah, it would have to be kind of thrown into the mix every once in a while. Okay, this is the week we have to use the little one. And just use that and put the big ones away.
Well, so, that's what I started doing. You know, since this car is on the road, I'll take it to work on the weekends, or I take it to the station on Sunday and, you know, just give it that. Not that it's a long drive, but it's something, you know, keep the battery charged. I thought you were talking about buying a car and then like just sticking it next to the garage and letting it sit.
Well, you that's know, what I would do.
Yeah, now you can't take it out and drive it, really.
What I would do personally is obviously the hard way.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't suggest anybody buy a car, just stick it on the side. But to incorporate it into the web of your commute, of your daily routine that involves an automobile, throw it in the mix, yes. But me personally, no, I'd buy a Honda Civic and stuff it in the back.
See, now, leave it there. As I've grown in the hobby and gotten older, I think of immediately how other people have rationalized, and you've done this too a lot of times, and say, okay, if you do buy that car, no, I don't care how small it is or what it is, it's still going to cost, you know, if you want to keep it on the road, there's a registration, a license, sure, inspection fee, sure. So that's a cost yearly, and insurance, right. And does that offset what you would put in gas in the vehicle you already own? You know,
a brilliant equation. Yes, I totally agree with you. It all depends on how much gas goes. If at $4 a gallon, I think you're like, but maybe it's $7 a gallon.
Yeah.
If that's the price that gasoline is going to be in the next couple of months, maybe over the summer.
Yeah.
You never know. The way, you know, we live in these strange times, you know, people invading other people. You never know what's going to happen with the economy. So that's why. Yeah, it's either that or a rickshaw or a 10-speed.
Yeah. Or and like I said, boy, I picked a good time to buy a truck. You know,
to sell your fuel efficient vehicle. Hey, speaking of which, you still have that fuel efficient vehicle?
Yep.
You still have it?
Yep.
Holy smokies, that's funny.
Sitting at the shop, and I had a couple calls on it again and again. Nobody followed up on it, and I'm wondering, like, after it's a year now that I've been driving this FJ, a year just this past week. Wow. And I got to wonder, like, you know, what kind of detrimental effects have been caused, you know, onto the Mazda sitting there, not being used for a year. I don't know. You know, I mean, earlier in the year, I had started it and moved it. You know, a few people came and looked at it, but I haven't been over there. I haven't touched it in a while. So, but yeah, it's still there. And that's a good car for you.
I know, but it's not a good car for my wife, unfortunately.
Right, right.
I have found, and that's a funny thing, because of the 5-speed, because of the manual transmission, I can't tell you how many times I would go online on a classified site and look for a manual vehicle.
Yeah.
Never find them. Never anywhere. This is my timing. My timing is awful. Right. Never find a manual 5-speed, 4-speed vehicle that I would like.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, I go, if this is a car that my wife and I are going to share, she doesn't want to drive 5-speed, so I'm going to have to find an automatic. Ray, I can't tell you how many great 5-speed vehicles I've seen online.
Really?
Great ones. I'm like, I got to snap this up right. Oh, it's a 5-speed.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, oh, you dirty dog, if I had a rock. It happens all the time. It happens. My timing is awful. If I'm looking for a pickup truck, I'll find the greatest a small little beater car. If I'm looking for a small little beater car, I'll find the greatest truck.
Yeah.
Online. If I'm looking for a classic car, I'll find a great commuter car. If I'm looking for a great commuter car, I'm going to find a fantastic classic car. I never time it right.
Well, that of course leads to the conversation about electric vehicles and hybrids. And I think in my family, a hybrid would be the vehicle to own for my wife to use, because she does just local driving around town, not highway. And I think that'd be, I'm not ready to go fully EV yet. I think the hybrid would be the way to go. But there is something that broke last week, and it is on our website, and people would want to visit motormouthradio.com. You can also check our social media sites with Motormouth Radio on Twitter and Facebook. And then on Instagram, it's real_MotormouthRadio. We have a video up there. It's a real quickie. It's only it's only a few seconds long. It ends up Bob Tasca from Tasca Ford, the guys that raced all through the 60s and 70s with the Mustangs. Yeah. Well, Bob Tasca, and I'm not sure how old he is, but he's got to be up there now, unless it's didn't say it was a junior or a son. I don't know. They're campaigning a fully electric, a fully EV Mustang, a late model Mustang. This sucker has 1,500 rear wheel horsepower. They just set the world record in the full body electric car at 8.12 seconds, 172.97 miles an hour.
Wow.
And
I'm watching it now. I think I got it. It's on real_MotormouthRadio. I'm watching it now on Instagram.
Right.
Yeah. Holy smokes. This thing is a terror. There was a guy, I would say about maybe 3 or 4 years ago, he was campaigning a Datsun 510. It was a small little car, little bracket racer, and he had an electric motor, Ray. It was the size of like three lunch boxes put together, and it sat above the rear wheels, and he unplugged it, put it aside, and put another one in during this article I was watching, during this video. This thing was the fastest little car I ever saw. It lit up like, boom, gone. There was no drama. It was just, if from the starting line, it took off like a rocket.
I couldn't
believe it. Yeah. And it was an electric vehicle, and it was just a Datsun 510 that would beat anybody.
Okay. Hold your volts while we take a quick break.
Okay.
Hang on.
You're listening to the Motor Mouth.
Hello, gentlemen.
Next
you guys
one.
Call yourself hot rods. Come on, man.
I was waiting for you to learn how to trim my bonsai plant.
Motor Mouth.
Love the show, and keep them coming.
You have to excuse me. I was just outside messing around with the car.
I'm reluctant to say I'm anything like you guys.
Motor Mouth.
But I am exactly like you guys.
I try and keep every old thing going. Good show as usual.
Motor Mouth.
You guys are trouble. I know you guys have your finger on the pulse of stuff.
I'll train staff of two will help.
Come on and ask and answer some car questions. I'm a fount of useless knowledge.
Oh, quite frankly, there are better things to do with your time.
Instructions are just another man's opinion, Ray.
Yeah, I talk to you guys when I need you. I appreciate you. I listen to you.
Yeah, I want to know what the is wrong with my car.
I'll be glad to answer any questions for you. I can.
You're indifferent because you glow in the dark, so it's all good.
Rob, can I ask you a question?
Sure, ask anything.
Motor Mouth!
Have you heard from Ray or Chris saying that this was going to be the best show ever in the history
of mankind?
No,
you see, it's funny because Gray will come in and say, well, Rob, this is going to be the greatest
show
we've ever done.
It's not Sunday morning until I'm sure.
And sometimes Chris...
Motormouth Radio is going to be the best show that was ever done.
And then Chris will sometimes joke that it's going to be the worst show they've ever done.
There are answers, sometimes correct ones, and we may have them.
Motormouth Radio, 90.3 FM, WHBC.
Motormouth!
Hey, you, get over here. Every Sunday, 12 to 1, you are going to tune in to hear the Motormouths, my friends Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer. 90.3 FM, WHPC. You might learn something.
All right, so we are now back with our guest. We have Mr. Dave Barden from the Power Probe Company on. Dave, pleasure to have you with us again.
Great to be back, guys. How are you guys doing?
Very good, very good.
Doing well, Dave. Yes, thank you for being on the show.
Yeah. You know, Power Probe is one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite tools to use. It really is, because when you do electrical work on a car, our other co-host Joe had always called He always said the test light was his favorite tool, and now he called back in the day. He started saying the power probe was like a test light on steroids.
And, great description.
Yeah, and you know, we came to learn that. So, Dave, what are you guys up to these days? What's happening with power probe? I know the power probe tool is still being sold and used, but what's happening with you guys?
A lot of new things out there and on the horizon. We've talked about our probe testers in the past, I believe.
Yes.
Our most popular, the PowerProbe 3, like you said, like a test light on steroids, combines the functions of a voltmeter, a test light, and even has the ability to apply power and ground to circuits. We have different versions. The PP4 has more multimeter functions like frequency and resistance. And our newest, the Maestro, has all those multimeter functions and the ability to show waveforms on the screen of the tool and Bluetooth. So you can actually send those readings out to an app on your phone or tablet.
Yeah, I noticed the newest power probe has a larger screen as well, which is good for guys like me who are getting a little older.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
That's that makes it real nice. And also I think it articulates itself. So if you have the tool, if it's upside down, the screen will flip as well. Is that correct?
They do have a flip screen function, because a lot of times you're pointing this thing down and your readings are upside down. So you have the ability to have it either way.
Yeah, most times I find I'm upside down. You know, I mean, because let's face it, when you're doing electrical work, especially under a dash or under the car, you can be in any position at any time. And
correct.
Where's the screwdriver? Oh, geez, what's that pain in my side? Oh, yeah, there's a screwdriver. You're laying on it. But
the display is also lit as well, correct? I'm looking at some of them now.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Because a lot of times you got a using a power probe in a dark area, like under a dash, you don't have a clear light source. So I can see that the display is lit as well, which is really nice.
Yeah, the newer tools, the displays are much easier to read, even in direct sunlight, under the dash, wherever you are.
Right.
Now, power probe's philosophy has always been trying to make a technician's life easier, specifically, you know, in the electrical testing department. And I believe we sent you guys a couple of new tools to try out.
Actually, yeah, I have this really cool the Pro Solder 50, the rechargeable soldering station, which I was playing with it a little bit yesterday, doing some small wires. I didn't have a project to work on, but I was just doing some static stuff. And these things, you know, I've been using for a few years the butane versions, which are great, and they're very handy. Except you need to have, obviously, butane, you know, available to you.
Right.
This one will charge off a USB, you know, any USB port, which is very accessible these days. What was the, did you guys have requests for this? Or what was the reasoning behind coming out with this product?
Well, our circuit testers are pretty well known, like you guys kind of explained. But we do have a lot of other tools that complement those. The other one we sent you was the ECT3000, our electrical circuit tracer.
Right.
So once you've used your power probe to find you've got a circuit problem, maybe it has a short or an open or something like that going on with the circuit. The hard part about that repair is finding where that short or open is physically in the car.
Right.
Right.
And yeah. This ECT3000 is made specifically so you can locate where the problem is before you start tearing the car apart. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I've wasted hours, occasionally days, chasing wiring looms through a car, pulling paneling, carpeting seats the whole way. With this tool, hopefully you're going to be able to locate within a certain area where the problem is, so you can be a little more specific before you start tearing the car.
Dave, how does the tool, I haven't physically, I wasn't able to see the tool itself. How does it work? Does it have like a metal tip on it that you run along the wire? Is that how it reacts?
Something like that. It's a fairly simple two-piece tool. You have a transmitter that will connect to the vehicle's battery, and then it has a signal wire. You'll connect that to the wire you have the issue with.
Right.
then you have a handheld receiver that can track that signal down the wire through most materials up to about 8 inches. You can adjust the sensitivity height. So if you want a tighter sensitivity or really wide range, and then you're just generally following that signal through the vehicle. And at the point you lose the signal is generally where the spot where the short or the open is. Then you can remove the carpet panels, etc.
Yeah. Right.
It's like a Geiger counter at a beach, basically.
Yeah, I saw a guy use something like that a few years ago, but it was outside to find a short in wiring. It was going out to a pool, and it was kind of like using ground penetrating radar. You know, it was reading through the ground, through the earth, is what I mean, and found that open, found the problem. And it was, I wanted to use this. And the problem is, you know, when you need a car that has a short or a problem, you never have one available.
Right.
You know, so I'm looking forward to that problem that comes up that I'm going to be able to actually test. Cause I have something like this that I use for home use. It was the same thing for tracking. It would induce a signal in a wire, and you can, and you follow the signal with your receiver. So yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, anything that can help productivity and make a technician's job easier is worth it.
You know, it's funny. You talk about having a car that does that you need a car that has a short. On my big Chrysler, if I open one door, the dome light on one side goes on if I open it, but it doesn't go on the other side. The dome light in the back. But if you open, like, the passenger door will turn on the passenger dome light. The driver's door will turn on the driver's door dome light. And I'm thinking, that's wrong. I may need this tool. I may have your car, Ray.
You got me thinking.
I may have a power probe test vehicle.
I actually have a schematic running through my head right now, because I'm thinking you could wire a car that would, that the right door would turn the right light on and the left door would turn the left light. You could possibly do that.
I didn't do it intentionally.
No, but so there's a common switch that would turn both on. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I may have that power probe test vehicle for you if you choose to use one. If you need it, yeah. You can throw a whole bunch of Power Pro products at my car, right. And they'll test them to the fullest.
Yeah,
but yes, I'm sorry I interrupted.
No, Dave, I noticed on social media, on YouTube, there's the Dave and Dave videos, which are highly entertaining. How did that come about? How did that whole project get life?
Well, of course, our social media manager hounds us for content, and we try to put out quality videos, but she prefers shorter. We just tried to make them quick, informational, a quick little overview of whatever we're talking about. And the two of us, my boss, Dave Marandino, and we're both ASE master technicians, so we like talking about this stuff. And we'll get our cameraman on, and he just shoots these videos, and they turned out to be pretty popular on on social media.
Yeah, I see them on YouTube. I watch them all the time because it's the content is fantastic, and like you said, they're short, so you don't have to commit a large amount of time to sitting there and, you know, and getting a lesson. And it's a nice quick hit, but it's a good way to get that information out. I'm big fan of it. I love them. I think they're fantastic.
Yeah, I'm watching one now. It's 1:09 long.
Yeah,
and of course, I don't have any audio on it, but I'm watching the both of you go back and forth. I found it super easy too, which nice. Very cool. Oh, and there's also graphics of still images. Ooh, and they changed.
Yeah, one of the last ones I saw, you guys had a test fixture set up. Maybe you were showing the short tester. I forget exactly what the video was, but I know you had a test box set up where you could display different things, and that's a great teaching tool right there. That's phenomenal.
Yeah. And yeah. two camera shoots, no less. You were changing shots and everything. Wow.
Nice.
I'm very impressed. That's cool stuff.
Very cool.
Very good. Yeah. I like the look. And it's all, I mean, you're actually testing your equipment. Is there anything that you can't test in a minute and a half? Is there like any sort of equipment that you guys have that would take longer to explain?
We're usually, you know, some of the more advanced tools, they have lots of different modes. You may have to take you know, just explaining one mode in one video and how, what you would use it for. So some of them would take a little longer.
Got it. Yeah. Cause I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, you're probably just doing, I can't hear it. So, cause we got a show going on. But you probably, you're just giving the basics of the tool, in that 1 minute or 2 minute block.
Correct. Or a specific test you can do or something like that.
Very cool.
Yeah, because most of the people in the industry are familiar with PowerProbe. They're familiar with the tools. And it's, again, just a quick, you know, it's great just to get your faces out there and just let the people be aware. So the other thing we like to make people aware of all the time, Chris, is the honor group of the hour. And Dave, this is a feature we have on the show every week, and we can't forget it, or we'd be remiss. Chris, do we have an honor group of the hour today to share with everybody?
I'm afraid we do.
Oh, good.
We do have an honor group of the hour this week here at Motormouth Radio. And of course, the Motormouth Radio honor group of the hour. If you go out to your car and was greeted with a dead battery, a problem we could have solved maybe with a power probe, but you know that sinking feeling when you go to start the vehicle and you hear nothing, or better, you hear that slow groaning crank followed by the random clicking of the starter solenoid, you know, and you find that turning the key harder or pressing the button harder doesn't solve the problem. So if you can't remember when you changed the battery, it was probably time to change it anyway. So go celebrate the cold and knock that green and white hairy cheese off the battery terminals and go change that battery. Because squeezing the key or pressing the button harder to start the car isn't going to cut it. And there you have it. That is your Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour.
Yeah, which oftentimes turns into the Dishonor Group of the Hour because you're a numbskull if you work on cars and your battery get that bad. But hey, listen, we've all had, you know, I'll tell you something. That's the reality of it is with cars now needing less maintenance. There's cars in my fleet that I find, wow, I haven't opened the hood in a while. There's no reason to, you know, it's like, wow, let me check, see if there's still an engine in there. And you open it up and then, you know, well, look, the washer fluid and check the oil and everything is fine. So anyway, Dave, how big of a fleet do you have? What's your personal collection like? Do you have
one truck, one SUV, three motorcycles.
Nice. Nice. What kind of bikes?
A couple of KTMs and what's the Kawasaki dirt bike.
Cool. Wow. You know, that's the thing. It's good for you. that's something like as we get older, usually the dirt bikes are the first things to go because falling off them and getting hurt is the first thing to happen.
Oh, it's been crossing my mind lately.
yeah. You know, and then you see the kids, and if you have kids or you're out on the trail and you see the younger guys out there, you know, doing the moves, and you say, yeah, I used to do that. It's an eye opener. I'm a street bike guy. I've never been a dirt bike guy. And I guess I'm kind of happy because now I don't have to worry about leaving it behind.
Dave, where are you? If you got a dirt bike, where are you located?
Well, I'm in Southern California, but I live up in the mountains, San Bernardino Mountains.
Oh,
got it. Nice.
Well, you know, that's the thing. You know, you can trail ride. You don't have to be doing MotoGP all the time. You could be out there. You know, you can just trail ride, which is fine. So, yeah.
I'm not trying to be any kind of motocross star. I just cruise in the trails.
Right. There's some time.
You're not leaving the ground or anything.
not much if I can help it.
Yeah.
That's for sure. But that is cool stuff. I mean, I love the fact that you're involved in something mechanical as well as part of your career and part of your living and part of your business. I think that's
my career was an auto technician. Where I grew up, Southern California in the 60s and 70s, if you weren't into cars,
yeah,
I mean, that's where it was at.
Yeah, you were in the wrong place if you weren't. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you were an auto technician at the time when, I guess you could say, it was evolving. Like, because I remember electronics in the 70s where they would roll this box up to the side of the car and they would throw these mysterious clamps on different components and lights would go on and off. And
Sun diagnostic.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's big old sun diagnostic.
I'm thinking more the Brainiac 2000. You know, it's like.
Now that's a reference.
Yeah.
In the 80s. I remember there was a time I had an old 77 Cadillac Seville, and they talked about diagnostic equipment in the shop manual, and they said you had to get this like Brainiac 2000, whatever it was. It looked like a Kenworth stereo. I mean, it was this big wood grain box that you had to hook up. I'm like, where in the world am I going to find that thing? And all it had was like two or three lights on it. One light was green and good. One light was bad and red. So I'm like, what am I going to do with this? What am I going to look on eBay? What am I going
to do? You know, we talk about the genesis of scan tools and all, and working at the shop, I had to diagnose a problem on a Grand National, which was an 86 or an 87. And I had to go dig out my Tech One scanner.
Yep.
And, you know, after using modern day frontline scan tools, putting the Tech One on was like powering up an Atari. You know, and you look at the the big LED screen, and you look at the LCD screen, and you look at the limited data flow that this thing, the data that it gave you. I was like, wait a minute, I must be missing menus here. No, I wasn't missing anything. It was just, that's how limited it was back then. And we take for granted how fast that technology has really, rocketed in this lifestyle. The modern scanners, it's like a cell phone compared to, computer technology back in the, in the 70s. Cell phones are so much more powerful than what computers were. So, and I remember, Dave, that one of the first times I showed a guy, I was, working on a restoration on a car, and it was all apart, but I wanted to spin the engine to make sure it spun. And I did it with my power probe. I just hooked it up and hit the button. And the guy's like, how are you doing that? I'm like, with this. He's like, what the hell's that? I'm like, this is how we do it. Like, this, you don't need an ignition switch or key. No, we just need this. So
that's amazing. That's still far beyond my realm of thought. I'm just thinking about like the fact that it can generate so much energy to turn a starter is just incredible. What is it as far as just going back to the soldering irons, how hot does one of your soldering irons get, the ones that you can plug into your computer in a USB? How hot does something like that get? Does it melt solder? I mean, dumb question of the day. Does it melt solder?
That's one of the things. That's why. That's the second thing we sent you. Yeah. Tried battery powered soldering irons over the years of my career. Never really been happy with them. They just didn't have enough heat.
Right.
You're holding it on the wire, it's not melting the solder, but I'm melting the insulation,
real well. Uh-huh. You're getting asphyxiated with the smoke. Right?
And like you said, I've been pretty happy using butanes, but they got their own problems. You've got to constantly refill them, and it's literally a little bit of a flamethrower. So you got to be real careful where you use it. But once we started testing these, I was super happy. It's a 50-watt soldering iron. So your standard plug-in-the-wall Radio Shack type pencil iron is usually only 25-watt.
Right.
It'll heat up to melting solder temperature within 10 seconds.
Yeah. Max temp 600 degrees C, which is 1,112 degrees Fahrenheit, Chris.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. That is, on another show that we do, that we have our Matco guy comes on with us, and they have their own line, and we were comparing specs one night, and he goes, wow, that's pretty good. He goes, I'm going to look into that, so, because that's the thing, like you said, startup time, how fast is it going to take, and Dave, that's the problem I have. I guess I'm a product of society too. I take a butane, torch or whatever, and it's always like, oh, come on, how long is this thing going to take? Yeah. I could use my bench solder, but you turn a bench soldering station on, you got to wait for that one too.
Right.
It's not instantaneous.
Oh yeah. I'm still using those old phone company soldering irons that I got from my dad 30 years ago that you plug in, and it's got the hard rubber grip on the back of it. I'm still using those things. And it's like you say, Ray, I could plug it in, go have lunch. Come, if I didn't set the garage on fire, I'll come back. Everything's great. It's still sitting in the ashtray. I'm like, all right, we're good.
And that's the thing that I think can't go unsaid. I mean, people know, but we have to say it anyway. Don't leave a hot soldering iron. Don't put it down precariously where it's going to, you know, especially in the interior of a car, on a carpet, on a on a seat.
Oh yeah,
definitely.
It's going to burn. You know, it's like the you see the newbie with a torch. You know, and he's waving it around, talking to people. Like, whoa, whoa! Oh, keep that thing pointed downstream, buddy.
You know? No, very true. You're absolutely right. Yeah. Right, there's safety precautions with everything that generates heat.
Right, right.
But just to know that the Power Probe soldering iron can light up and be ready to go in a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
Right. Holy smokes, that alone is a benefit.
And it's nice. You have a blow molded case, you have your kit parts in there, you can carry this thing around. It's you know, that's the way you want to store things, you know. Of course, you have to wait again for the thing to cool down before you can put it back in the case. But that goes with even like with the butanes.
Oh, yeah.
Like I said, there's always that
Actually got a cover you can put over the tip. It's like a heat shield.
Yeah.
But, and it does come with different tips, like a heat shrink attachment. So you can, when you're putting the heat shrink on your newly soldered connection.
Yeah, that's cool. No more using a Bic lighter or a match, you know.
Right.
I've always
Think of everything. That's great.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. I love this. This is just, it is really nice to see a product and to talk about a product that is just well thought out. I
have to say, with newer cars, a lot of the problems now, I think there's more electrical type problems than there are component based problems.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it entails changing a connector, soldering something in place, and, you know, maybe pieces of wiring or whatever. So tools like this become more important in a technician's arsenal, you know, it would be nice if it was all component based, but it's not. You know, it's, you test that. That's where the Power Probe comes in, Chris, because you have a blow motor.
That's the component.
Yeah, blow motor is not working. With the Power Probe, you can literally use that Power Probe and you can, it's like doing bidirectional control with the scanner. The Power Probe provides power or provides ground. So you can give that device power with the Power Probe. And if I've done it, blow motor comes on, like, okay. The blow motor isn't the problem. It works. You know, it's something in between the blow motor and the switch. You know, and usually, you know, it's usually the power resistor, but could be a connector. It could be, you know, it could be a switch. It could be other things. So
I love it.
And in my experience, the ability to apply ground is just important. I find so many ground problems, and it usually is a ground problem in my world.
You know, it's
just applying it. And like I had an engine running just barely sputtering along, and all I did is apply the Power Probe to the block and applied ground, and everything smoothed out. And so we knew he had a bad ground strap just that quickly.
Wow. You know, Dave, it's so timely that you say that, because we have a we're trying to grow our YouTube channel, Motor Mouth Radio YouTube channel, and our other co-host Joe, great technician, one of the sayings that he pioneered and championed was, what part of a bad ground don't you understand? Just this week, we came up with a graphic to show that, and we're going to be launching that. So we may have to stick a Power Probe in his hand in the graphic. We may add that in.
There you go.
Yeah.
Because it's so true. Grounds now are, I mean, I tell people this regularly, like if an older car, it pays just every now and again just to go and just disconnect grounds and dress them and reconnect them and just, you know, give them a little what for. I just watched a video where a guy had it was a ground issue, and what it had been, the car had been in a body shop, and there was a bracket that had to be changed as part of the collision repair. And that bracket housed one of the major grounds.
Right.
And the bolt that put the ground lug back on wasn't secured properly by whoever did the body work. I guess they just, you know, they missed that. They had a lot of work to do, and all the other problems ensued. But it just goes to show, just one ground can make a big difference in how that car runs or performs. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's, I'm glad you said that. That's,
yeah.
And I can remember not knowing, younger mechanic, you know, modifying cars, tearing that stuff off because it was in the way.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, back in the day, it wasn't, I kind of want to say it wasn't as critical, I guess. But I do know.
But it's super critical now.
Yeah. Look at any older car. You can tell when an older car is coming down the road at you at night when you see yellow headlights. And I don't mean yellow as in, you know, yellow.
Yeah,
I mean,
like, they're like beige. Yeah.
Bad ground, you know, just poor grounding. Case in point, now I restored a 65 Pontiac and I uber grounded it. I mean, this car is so well grounded. Every panel and every section is grounded back to the battery, you know, the front of the body, the back of the battery, the chassis, the inside. I mean, it is like, and so the voltage is rock steady. The lights are bright, and it didn't take a lot of work to do that. You know, it really did not, but
And I totally understand that same Chrysler I got out of a garage that sat and slumbered for 30 years. And the first thing I did once I got it running was start cleaning all the grounds. Any ground I saw, I cleaned it up, dressed it, like Ray said, slapped it back on. And thankfully, the car has been okay for something that is still has its electronic glitches, but it functions. And just by, like you say, just cleaning the grounds.
Dave, do you have a favorite technique for dealing with and dressing ground connections?
You guys are back east, so it's not as big a problem out here as it is definitely back there, right. Where you're dealing with more corrosion issues. I, like you said, I'll take them off, wire brush them, you know, the bolt that it's mounted to, make sure everything's clean. Contact surfaces, and at best, if you've got it, use some dielectric grease. That'll keep it protected.
Yes. The other thing I like to add in there is a star washer, an external star washer.
Add some bite to it.
Or two. And what I mean is, if you picture you have a ground stud, let's say, and you have like a cable with a ring eye on it, I'll put a star washer on either side of that eye terminal. So one washer will bite on the substrate, whatever panel that stud is in, and the other one is going to bite into the nut.
That's great.
Again, you know, they're cheap. I buy them by a bag of 1,000, and you know, it's just double protection. And like you said, some dielectric grease or something to coat that with. Yeah. You're going to be golden.
I like that. Great tip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you definitely lose a lot through a bad ground.
Has anybody, Dave, come up with like the greatest way to use a power probe appliance? Like, has anybody stepped up to you and said, hey, I fixed a washing machine, or hey, I fixed a Sherman tank with one of these things? Was there any sort of strange way they were applied and were successful?
I've heard some pretty amazing ones. You talked about a Matco tool dealer, a guy trying to unload a toolbox and his tailgate lift wasn't working, got his power probe out, bzzz, lowered it down.
Yeah.
The tool I just sent you, the ECT 3000, you talked about a guy like looking for a wire in his yard. I've literally had customers say they've done that. They've tracked copper plumbing in their walls.
Wow.
A guy had electric heated concrete floor that had a break in it. He tracked that with that tool.
There you go.
Some of the creativity of our customers is just amazing.
Yeah. No, that's great. You know, I love to hear stuff like that because it'll give me ideas. You know, it's it's fantastic. Yeah. That is great stuff.
That is cool. Yeah, because a lot of times I'm doing more housework than I'm doing car work. So I'm writing all this stuff down. It's great.
Oh, sure. And the tools, you know, they cross over. You know, it's I use my automotive stuff in the house all the time.
Yeah, besides our, you know, more automotive or vehicle specific power probes, we do sell a line of a couple of multimeters that are also suitable for homework and actually industrial work.
Okay. Are they give us a rundown on the multimeter thing? I guess like a regular VOM type of a thing.
We've had what's called the PPDMM, which was a little more automotive focused, but 600 volt Cat 4, so it was hybrid safe. True RMS readings for accurate AC readings and your modes like frequency, all the multimeter test modes, amps, milliamps, but a traditional meter, not like our power probe circuit tester.
Right.
We've had that one for quite a while. If you go to our website, it's not available for shipping yet, but we have a new high-end meter coming out, and actually I'm not very familiar with it yet.
Yeah. Okay.
DM500 Max. This one will be, 40,000 count. So lots of digits, accurate readings, got a barcode. I mean, a bar graph that'll go along with the readings. 1,000 volt Cat3 again, so hybrid safe. But this is going to be a much more accurate meter than our existing PPDMM. Our PPDMM is known for its really inexpensive meter with a lot of features.
Well, a lot of guys look for that because, you know, being from the electronic industry, you know, Fluke has always been our meter of choice. It's always been the, you know, the gold standard, but
and I'm not going to argue that they aren't.
Right. And a lot of guys
pay the Fluke price.
Yeah. But they are very expensive. That's right. They are. And there's, and, you know, back in the day, years ago, I wouldn't touch the cheaper off brands. It was crap back, you know, years ago, but I will say that now there's a lot of meter companies, a lot of companies in general that are coming up with their lines of multimeters. I don't want to use the word budget meters, but they're definitely affordable. And I've used some of them just to see. I wanted to see just how, you know, good or bad they were. And I was very impressed. You know, for, you know, if you're not doing, you know, NASA or electronic grade, you know, meet readings and type of work, these things are fine for automotive work and Wilson work. Absolutely. You know what? The lowest stuff now is, I think the bars have changed. So that's, I'm sure your stuff is.
But with hybrid and electric vehicles where the voltages are getting a lot higher than your typical 12 and 24 volt, now we're getting into the hundreds. That's where safety and quality in a meter is going to start to matter.
Well, that's very true. That's the thing. You know, I did take an ICAR class on hybrids a few years ago. I'm sure that's even changed already. And safety was the one thing that was stressed right from the start, throughout the class and right at the end, because I think we're talking like, you know, 400-600 volts, you know, in that range. And
correct.
Yeah. I'll curl what's left of your hair.
I'll hurt you. Sure. Well,
it's the current that's going to do it, not the voltage, but.
Right. I mean, you know something, Dave, I'm looking at your Power Probe site, the website, really well thought out, just like the products, very well thought out site. Everything is very clean and well, just well placed, easy to navigate. everything works. I've done my fair share of websites in the past, and it's so nice to see sites that have working pages and clear pictures. It's well done.
The graphics are great. I love the Power Probe graphics. They're very very eye catching. You know, they convey the information very well.
Thanks. I can't take credit for either one of those, but thanks.
All right. You can't buy, but yeah, de facto, because you're here, so why not? Listen, with anything else, it's a team. So if the team is working and clicking, then everybody benefits. So that's good.
Yep. Like I said, there's a lot of ex-master technicians that are on staff here. So we're always technician focused and trying to make their life easier.
How many people do you have working at the company, Dave?
Yeah, we're getting bigger all the time.
Okay.
I think we're close to 20 in the local office.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Yeah. I notice you have a facility in North Carolina.
Correct.
Which is nice. That's part of the country that's getting a lot of attention from me these days. Yeah, was down there and want to go back and look again. It's a real nice part of the country, but. Yeah. So what's on the horizon? Do you have any other new products in development or in works that you can talk about?
You'll see if you're in that website, there is a new product section.
Okay.
That meter I talked about, a little handheld single probe meter that's a little more industrial focused, and a couple of what we call tip accessories.
Ah, yeah.
Now we had a tip accessory that knocked, whenever you applied power on a power probe, it put out whatever battery voltage you are connected to, 12 volt. If you press the button, you got 12 volts out of the power probe. 24 volt, you got 24 volt. But we are one of our number one selling accessories was a little tip accessory that went between the tip and the tool that limited to 5 volts and limited the current.
5 volt reference. Yeah, the little red.
Correct.
Yes. Yes.
Ooh, so I like that.
And now we got a couple accessories just like that. One will have a display on it that will give you amp readings. So whenever you're powering a component up, you can see amp readings as high as 20 amps, as low as 1 milliamp.
Wow, very nice.
Wow.
And the third one, a little more specific, but it'll allow you to pulse width modulate the output. That's kind of like the fast on-off.
Right.
They use to control motor speeds and light dimming and things like that now. So you'll be able to get a pulse width modulated output from your tool also. Wow,
very nice. Very nice. That's what I call keeping up with technology. That is excellent.
Those are all functions that any existing power probe user will be able to add to their power probe.
Right. Yes, and you just answered my question, because I was wondering if this power probe can generate a current and operate a component. Is there like some sort of safeguard that will protect the power probe or protect the component if you're putting too much current into it or too little current into it? And that just answered that question. Thank you.
Right.
The power probe is limited. It does have a breaker.
It does have a circuit breaker, correct.
Right. Right. Because those are things that I would need to know, because I'll be the first one to melt any component.
In case of point, when you're turning an engine, turning a starter, that's kind of like at the way far end of what's recommended. But
correct. And you're just energizing the solenoid.
Well, no, I actually cranked the engine.
Wow.
But I did it with, the engine had plugs in it. It was very little resistance. It wasn't, going to start. I just wanted to, and it did it. Yeah, it's so that, and I knew that if I was asking more than the tool could give me the circuit trip, and I'd be okay. But just so you know, it did turn over a big block Chevy with no plugs.
Yeah, it's tough to damage the tool even if you do a direct short. Right. But like I always say, when you mentioned education earlier, I do a lot of training at tech schools. Like Spider-Man said, with great power comes great responsibility. Know what you're on before you apply that power and ground, because you could do some damage on today's new cars.
Yes. I was working on this. It was an older car, so it was no fear. But yeah, with newer cars, absolutely. You could be in trouble.
But, mm-hmm. You let the smoke out of the wire.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was one thing letting the smoke out of a wire with older cars, but now you can take out some expensive modules and stuff. Be not careful.
Right.
Very, very true. And yeah, that's where components like this and equipment like this is imperative to vehicle repair nowadays, because there's a lot of thought into it. And I'm very impressed by it. Dave, this is a great interview and well done. I learned a lot.
Yes.
Thanks, guys. It's always fun coming on here.
Right. Well, we thank you for coming on, Dave. We're gonna end this show for today, because we only have an hour to do this, but we do look forward to having you on again. I have Jocelyn's contact. I should have your contact info somewhere, but again, it was a number of years ago. I have to dig back, because I definitely want to keep you in rotation and get you on the service, Lance, because it's something that we deal with all the time. And
great, that'd be fun.
And again, I thank you for coming on. So let me sign off here. You can hang for a minute if you want, and we'll talk some more. But for Chris Switzer, Ray Guarino, for Dave Barden, I'm sorry, we are ending this session of Motor Mouth Radio. Chris, what do you always say that our friend Chassis John always says that he took from you when we end our show?
Don't follow us home, and remember to take your power probe.
Exactly. Dave, thanks for being with us. We look forward to having you on again in the future. And we'll get this up on motormouthradio.com so everybody can share it and have a good time with it.
Great. Thanks very much, guys.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.